Blog Talk Radio.
And coming right out of that fretboard run by the amazing Pete Fry, our new show intro. This is Steven Zimmer on the Star Chamber Show, episode number 148. And yes, as I said, that is our new intro for 2019, courtesy of Pete Fry. If you missed the show with him several weeks back, go check it out because he is a phenomenal guitar player, and you got a little taste of that right there with the she actually wrote and recorded just for us at the Star Chamber Show. So I'm here tonight live with, and it looks like she's on, we got Holly Phillippe in Indiana and Daniel Dark in Tennessee. Hello, my co-hosts.
How's it going tonight? I hope Holly is on. There.
Do you
bring your cell phone, hollering Holly.
Can you hear me?
You're awful soft tonight. You're awful soft.
Okay, let me turn it up here. Okay, how's that better?
You're getting better.
Okay, better. Better.
Yeah.
And better.
Yeah. Holly's not known for being soft, by the way, folks. Yeah, she's definitely not known for being subtle or quiet or. But we'll get the kinks worked out here.
She's subtle like a sledgehammer.
And it's cold.
Yeah. Even after 148 shows, we're still going to have technical difficulties. But we will get them straight because we got a great show for you tonight, which actually is a lot of fun for me because it gives me a chance to hear from writers that are they're completely outside the genre that I write. So it's shows like this are very cool, and I'm explaining more why later. But tonight we're actually going to give – it's not quite Valentine's Day, but we are going to be focusing on the romance genre tonight with not one, just one but two guests. So we'll be bringing them aboard just shortly. I do have some cool news on the Imaginarium front, of course, because this show follows along with the Imaginarium journey year-round. And today we began announcing our guests. And Daniel Dark, of course, is one of the guests that went up on the first wave today and is on the site now. And we kicked it off with our first Imaginator, who is a writer, director, producer in the world of film, Kevin Tenney. And he actually has two iconic classic horror films under his belt. Those of you that are big 80s horror film fans will definitely know Witchboard and Night of the Demons, both of which are definitely considered iconic in the horror genre and definitely, I think stand the test of time. Both are just really, really just excellent films. And Kevin has a slew of films to his credit. I mean, he's got everything from family action adventure films like Bigfoot to a neo-noir film called TikTok. I mean, so he's done a lot of work in a lot of areas. So really, really definitely a guy that's just a top skill level in the film world. And interestingly enough, he's actually working on his first novel. So Imaginarium, perfect place for him to be. And we wanted to announce somebody related to the film world because we always want to get across the impression Imaginarium is all genres and it is also it's also for all types of writing. So not only like I said, we got the whole range, mystery, thriller, romance, sci-fi, fan, everything there. But we also in terms of types of writing, embrace comic books, film and all that. So we think it's important to, definitely time certain announcements in the right way to reiterate that. And so our first Imaginator is in fact a film legend, and he definitely is one that I definitely revered growing up in terms of my love of horror films. And so I'm kind of a little extra excited to catch up with him in person this fall. So that was the big news today, Daniel. We got quite a dandy announced as far as our first first Imaginator.
Well, good, good. And with him coming on and everything, what is the theme going to be this year? Do we have a theme for this year's Imaginarium?
Well, it's not a specific theme. I mean, I mean, it's like I said, you know, we embrace all genres. We are getting a lot of stuff together right now as far as, like, new additions. We definitely don't want to take away anything from the core that everybody loves and is, you know, very comfortable with and you know, likes in terms of our programming and everything. But we always do want to grow a little bit and add a few new things. And I know Holly's been, you know, plotting and planning on that side of things. And so I'll let her comment a little bit more on that. I know she's having some tech difficulties. So hopefully she's getting a few of those. Is Holly, you still with us? She may not be.
I don't see anything from her. Let me ask her real quick.
Yeah, I don't hear Holly. So yeah, we'll have to just carry it as best we can here. But yeah,
she says that she can hear us, but we can't hear her for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, she might have to call back in. Try calling back in, Holly. But we will definitely be adding some new things this year. I know we've got some big plans that we haven't publicly unveiled yet as far as in the film track and the film exhibition side of things. We definitely have some new programming elements that are coming into that, but of course that's our big core, of course, is our programming. And so there are going to be a number of new things done this year, and I'm just we're pretty close to talking publicly about them, but expect right now just a slew of guest announcements, because we got up I think the first wave of a little more than 30 put up on the website today. There will be probably about 200 by the time it'll be our record, but it'll be about 200 by the time the convention hits in October. And some of the people that are going up and are some of the new faces, like spotlighted guests and all. I mean, just phenomenal. I mean, people have done voice acting work for like Family Guy and Marvel and all kinds of stuff. And then, you know, people that have worked for Disney, for instance, and and that person, recently sold a short film to Showtime, and just absolutely great people are rolling into this event for this year. So, lots to get excited about. And I think that is Holly calling back in.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you now.
There you go.
Right.
There she is.
There she is.
Sorry, guys. I've been through hell and back pretty much. I am stuck up in the northern lands of Blizzard territory in Indiana, and I'm ready to come back to Kentucky, let me tell you. But my mother fell off her porch and broke some ribs, so I've been stuck up here for a week. And I'm cold, and I'm ready to come back.
Well, we miss you. We definitely
well,
do. So
I'm ready. But yes, we I've still been working on Imaginary, and we're still ready to go. And this year, as we say every year, it's always bigger and better. But this year will absolutely blow some people away once you find out what all I do have in store, and once we start typing out these Imaginators. And we'll announce our guest of honor here in the next month.
Yeah, it's I got done. I think you were off the phone, but I gave him a little sneak peek about the first wave of guests we announced today.
Yeah.
And those are up on the site, and they will include, of course, Daniel Dark, who is one of that first wave. But really good group. Last week's guest, Arlene Gale, as a matter of fact, is a spotlighted guest among that group.
She's phenomenal.
And, I told them, Holly, about how, you know, some of them have done voice work with Family Guy and Marvel and so forth, and another one had, you know, done, work with Disney and, you know, sold a recent short film to Showtime. I'm talking, of course, about Isaac Wells and Brett Brooks, who are both spotlighted guests, and will both get their own individual announcements in our channels too. Just a phenomenal group of guests, just stacking up here. So it's gonna be top notch content wise. So
yes,
So that's
yes,
that's gonna be
yes,
a lot of
yes.
fun.
And fans.
So you still got Rob
out.
Zombie coming and stuff, or?
Well, we haven't quite gotten that enough.
I,
I should get everybody excited and say something real, real murky, like I can neither confirm nor deny. But I won't do that to y'all. No, we don't have Rob Zombie yet. But boy, that would be fun.
You said Disney. Doesn't he do Disney movies?
Yes.
Well, no, he does the Hallmark Channel movies. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Hallmark Channel movies, right. Oh, Lord.
That's awesome. You never know who will show up at Imaginarium.
No, no. It's a lot of fun. And tonight's guests, both of them should be there. We'll get their official takes on that. But getting back to what I was saying tonight, and that's one of the reasons I think Imaginarium is so special, is because so many events, you know, tend to, you know, just focus on a genre. And we get that, too. Like, some people will get a hold of me and say, Imaginarium, I thought that was just about fantasy authors.
Fantasy.
And I'm like, no, no. It's been pretty clear. I mean, we've had, you know, last year's guest of honor is romance. We had, you know, Lori Wilde before that, who was, you know, also in romance. And, you know, have made a very concerted effort to make sure that, you know, all genres are very, very well represented and there's a very nice balance. I don't even know how that gets out there, but you know, a lot of events do tend to specialize in genres, and I think that there is, you know, something in like Imaginarium that takes advantage of the fact that you can learn different things to incorporate in your genre from a writer of another genre. So what I mean by that is you write horror, for instance. You can learn a lot from a mystery author to add mystery elements into your horror tale. Or you can learn from a romance writer to write romance elements
fantasy
tale.
Like with me, I write, you know, romantic horror, you know, so.
Right. Or blend them. Or you blend them outright like Daniel. But that's the thing. You learn from other genres writers, and I think that's one of the cool things about having the kind of balance that we do at Imaginarium, because you can, you know, get together and talk shop or craft with writers that you don't normally get a chance to when you go to a genre-specific event.
And let me say also, so, it's not just writers. It's anyone in the creative field, too. And we also, you know, we just don't focus on writing books. We focus on screenwriting, so that covers film, that covers, somebody's got to design your game, somebody's got to write that game, playing Dungeons & Dragons, somebody's got to be creative enough to write the story. I mean, writing is in, like, everything you do, podcasting, blogging, I mean, it's...
Well, we had gamers there last year and everything that were doing, that had done, you know, their own
games. Yes. Doing demos.
You know, video games and everything like that, and had the booth there last year, which is a, you know, film director, you know, had Denzel there, you know, isn't that his name?
Demetrius and all them.
Mm-hmm. Demetrius. Had Demetrius there,
yeah,
you know,
Demetrius
for his movies and stuff. And, you know, different people like that that, you know, you don't have at just a writer's event.
Exactly.
And the thing about it is, you know, with that writer's event and everything, where you're talking about listening to other genres, you know, I write horror, but I also write cookbooks. I also write, you know, other things. And you're not going to sit there and learn how to write, you know, romance or anything like that if you spend the whole time just doing on whatever writing that you're doing right now.
Right, right. Instead of being one note, you can, you know, go outside your comfort zone. And then who do you need? Well, we have publishers. We have editors. We have artists. Everybody needs artists. And then if you're in the film industry, you're going to need special effects artists. You're going to need, you know, prop masters. It's the whole realm. It all comes together. It's ran by creatives for creatives.
Yeah,
so it was like last year. I had a friend, you know, come up to me and say, "I want to do a screenplay of your book." I don't do screenplays. I don't know how to do a screenplay myself. You know, but he does. And
right.
Networking.
Yeah. Yeah, those kind of segues are very important part of the mix.
Yep.
And especially today with people wanting to get their story told on different platforms and types of media. That's very, very important. Mm-hmm. And we have, speaking of creatives, we got some chat room faces that I recognize already. David Sheridan, the creative flame himself, Lord Irish. And
David.
Rebecca Westerman, R.G. Westerman. Yes.
Oh, hi, Beth.
A great up-and-coming author who's also familiar with the Imaginarium craziness. They're both in the chat room at the moment. And let's get this part. Yeah, Ollie is unable to access the chat room next to the issues up in Indiana. But I will not delay this any longer because these are. I'll let Holly give a little intro here, but I'm gonna say first that these are two of my favorite people in the regional area. They're definitely both well regarded by readers all over the world. Both are very accomplished writers. One of whom actually hangs out with us on a regular basis in the chat room. We finally got her on to the show tonight, but I just love the kind of very positive attitude these two have. They're both great writers. They're both romance authors, which is going to fit great with our discussion tonight. And Holly, bring them both in.
Yeah. We're going to introduce the fabulous duo. Of Mrs. Parker and Miss Kinzie Michaels, Molly Daniels. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
How y'all doing tonight?
Exciting.
Oh, I'm great. If I got any better, I'd be twins. Same here.
That might be a good thing.
I need a twin or a clone or something, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they come in handy once in a while.
Well, we're excited to have you, especially with the topic tonight, and just to have you in general on the show. And I must say, every week you've heard Kinzie Michaels mentioned on the show because she's often in our chat room. So I must say, it is awesome to actually have you on the show tonight officially. So yeah, folks get to finally meet a little more about you, the person behind the legendary swag that we always talk about.
Wow.
Is one of these ladies the Kleenex lady?
Yes. Kinzie Michaels.
That would be me. As I've said so much before, I sneeze year round, so I thought it was an excellent idea until Stephen pointed out the other use for it, which totally ruined it for me.
Oh.
It didn't for us.
Oh no,
Stephen pointed that out to you, huh?
You'd think as a romance writer, my mind would already go there, but no, it didn't.
You're a sweet romance writer.
They're multifunctional.
That's right.
That's true.
That's right. Right. So, Holly, do you want to tackle the first interrogation of the night, or what direction should we take this? Because, it's going to be fun. We definitely want to get into writing and publishing in the genre, because that's something that a lot of listeners are going to want to hear about. But, Holly, get this party started.
Well, we always talk about how romance fans, you guys have a whole different group of fans. How do you feel? And I know now, like Molly, you're branching out, if I'm correct, too. You're going to do mystery?
Yeah.
Right. You're getting ready to focus on... No?
No, I'm moving kind of into the time travel fantasy area.
Oh. Well, very good.
I don't know how, but it's kind of sci-fi.
You're going to get there. Well, that's cool. Well, I want to know, how do you... feel that you are actually in the romance area and have done this for so many years, how do you feel that your fans do differ from like those in like a horror genre or fantasy genre? Or I mean, how do you keep them intrigued?
Well, that's a very good question. I am not your typical romance writer, in the sense that not all my stories are the same, you know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl again, yada, yada, yada. They may start out together and then they just kind of take it off, go off in their own direction and kind of wander all over the place. And it may end up not even, the romance is there, but it may be another whole plot that they're going off on. It's not just, it's a little bit of everything. It's kind of, you know, that you've got, well, like my sci-fi series, there's a whole plot arc that I did not anticipate that ends up going through all four books. And in fact, in the last one, I had an elder go rogue, so that number five has to be about him instead of the who I thought it was going to be. So they just kind of wander all over. The books kind of write themselves. I'm just hang on and I'm along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Misty?
It's, you know, it's just good storytelling, basically. I know what they like. My readers love a good laugh. They love, you know, hotness mixed with very quirky characters and some surprises. And, you know, I'm just able to give them that. And, I mean, I love laughter. So, you know, I write a lot of romantic comedy. And there's comedy even in my darker stuff that I write, too. So they know to expect that from me. So I think love and laughter just kind of goes hand in hand.
Cool. And I'm a big fan of those books.
More or less, I think it's know, you know, you know your fans, and so yeah, you can adjust, you know, accordingly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Well, you hear that when you
go
talk
ahead,
to a lot of romance publishers. At least I hear it. And, you know, and I know Misty also writes in the fantasy genre, so, I mean, she's dealt with different types of readerships before. But they, you know, the thing you always hear them say is that romance readers have a certain kind of expectation that you have to meet generally, that most publishers, you know, want to kind of their writers to kind of stay, you know, stay within those boundaries a little bit. And that once you, if you do stay on those boundaries, they're voracious, that they, you know, they'll read. And so that's why, you know, I think you see a lot more output, you know, from a lot of romance writers. Do you want to comment a little bit on that aspect? I don't want to use the word formula, but, I'm, you know, talking about the major, you know, like romance publishers, they tend to, they want a certain, you know, like I said, certain parameters to be in place for, you know, for them. And then venturing outside of that, are you able to, doing what you do, or do you, kind of adhere to those, you know, basic core things?
Well, I learned a long time ago.
Publisher. Yeah.
Yeah. A long time ago, I learned that, you have to have a happily ever after. When I first started writing,
yes.
I didn't, you know, I had planned to not have the happily ever after, and then started talking with the other people, they're like, no, you have to have the happily ever after.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then some of them, you can be fine with happily ever after for now. You know, you can kind of cut the book off where they've gotten together, and then maybe a couple of books down the road, if you write a sequel, it's okay if they split up because they're not the focus of that book.
Correct.
Okay.
So what do you like the movie Brian song, where there's not a happily ever after, there's happily dead after.
of course you would go there. Of course you would go there. It is the Daniel.
Which movie is that? Brian song?
Yeah.
O'Brien's song.
You remember
okay.
Brian's song, the old movie where he dies at the end?
Oh. Oh, okay. I thought you said what Brian saw. Okay. No, I haven't actually seen that. No, I was thinking of like Cold Mountain or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, it's not a romance if he dies at the end. Sorry, just not.
It's
like
totally romantic. The whole movie's totally romantic
yeah.
and everything, except for the fact that he dies at the end of the movie.
And therefore, it's not a romance. Good story, though. Yeah, it's still a good story. Yeah. It's just not a romance.
It's sort of like
right.
the ones that Sparks writes, you know, where, you know, they're not together at the end of the movie.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah, and the romance,
if
somebody
does.
Don't like that. They don't like
no.
that, apparently.
No, we
That's
do
not.
Like
that.
No.
Nicholas Sparks is doing well on them not liking it.
Well, he is, yes. He definitely is. I don't know that
norm,
they definitely are romance fan. If romance readers are reading his work as much, but I mean,
right?
I don't know really who's reading his books, but somebody is.
Somebody
right,
is,
right.
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Somebody is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the groups I'm in, a lot of the writers don't like him because he has the staff.
Well, because he does do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how do some of the romance writers?
Right? Yeah.
How do writers keep their stories and everything fresh when they are having to kind of follow along a certain pattern? You know, the ends happily ever after, and some of those elements that are fairly consistent in like a major publisher's type of fare. How does a romance writer keep it interesting and fresh when they have to meet some of those things? In your opinion,
well,
Miss
why,
D, we'll start with
that's
you.
That's why I'm an indie romance writer, basically. I've got a couple of small presses, but I'm mostly indie now, and I'm glad because I can do my own thing. As long as I have the Happily Ever After, I can do whatever I want. You know, I'm not bound by their, you know, formulas and rules like that. And
right.
honestly, I think the indie publishing scene has their finger on the reader's pulse better than a lot of the traditional publishers do. I know, you know, Robin Peterman, you know, she was the guest author there at Imaginarium. Yeah, I was in a talk there with her, and she said that a publisher had told her that paranormal romance was dead. And that cannot be farther from the truth. It is not dead.
They don't always know everything. You know?
No. Absolutely not. So, yeah, I think we know a little more sometimes than the publishers do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
My sci-fi series was my second highest seller this year.
Really?
Awesome.
Which one?
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Second only to my $5 book, which has more horror/paranormal fiction in it.
Yeah,
I think
see,
everybody
I
liked the
$5
price tag. But I think I sold 39, I hand-sold 39 copies of it, and I think Heart-Sized Chances is book one, was right behind it at like 32 or 33, so it wasn't too far behind.
Oh, good, yeah.
Very cool.
So
but in sales, I mean,
year.
We're talking about sales, though, romance is by far, I mean, I think that, you know, the big seller. I mean, as far as all the authors I know that are able to live full-time off just their book sales, the overwhelming majority of them are romance authors. And beyond that, you know, they tend to be like mystery or thriller authors, the ones that are independent. But obviously there's, you know, with it being the big one, I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, I mean, I talk often about just the flood of content in the market. Now, you, I know you're diligent, Misty, and I know I want you to talk about that because you do a great job with, like, your newsletters and things like that. But I would love for you and Kenzie to talk about the getting above the white noise. And by that, I mean just the getting above the volume, the sheer volume that's out there. How do you get your stuff seen in a flooded market? What do you have any advice, you know, when you have a unique independent voice like both of you have? What are some of your words of wisdom for writers?
Persistence. Basically, patience and persistence. So, I mean,
definitely.
You're going to start out, if you start a newsletter, you're not going to have 5,000 subscribers starting out. You're going to have 3, and you just keep going, growing it from there. I mean, you have to find people that actually like what you do and want more of it and you keep catering to them. And you be personable, too. That's a big thing. There's like the 80,
definitely.
Yeah, the 80, what is it, the 80-20 marketing rule or something? It's
mm-hmm. Yeah.
80% personal and then 20% marketing. Yeah, well, whatever. But, I mean, you show them who you are as a person. You know, post pictures of, you know, your family and what you're doing and activities and, you know, ask them questions and, you know, talk to people. Just basically talk to people. You know,
yeah, readers
know
love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, everybody does.
Like,
yeah,
you know, they're more part of your life. You know, they get a sneak peek of your life. And,
right.
Yeah, they love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Missy's doing a smart thing. She's
mainly.
Got...
What platforms do you use mainly?
For?
Hello?
Oh,
like
so
social
for,
media.
He's
talking social media. But we can get to that in a second. I do want to commend Misty on one thing.
Okay.
Her site and her newsletter are phenomenal. And I do advise people to check them out. Really easy to get through her content. And the newsletter is really, really well done and has a lot of incentive to it. And the reason I mention that is because there's so much of a mess in social media right now. So much of ebbs
mm-hmm.
and flows, and you know, a lot of people
mm-hmm.
falling away from social media and or joining other alternative social media sites and you know, just all the mess with social media. I think it's good that one thing Misty does that I want to point out to our audience is that she has control over her newsletter and her website. Those things can't be pulled out from under her, or you know, a change in algorithm like at Facebook can't affect that. I mean, when she builds
right.
up a big newsletter or a big following on a website, yeah, she's got that. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you have to depend upon
Facebook
another
deal.
Party. And
that is part of the platform right there. So,
yeah.
But off that, what social media do both of you use, and or advise? You know, what's your recommendation on the best ones to use right now?
Facebook is still big. It's still really huge. I do a lot of advertising now on Facebook. It takes a while to learn how to do that, but you can. Twitter is off and on. You know, it can be pretty good. I've gotten on Instagram quite a bit. You have to really kind of treat it a little differently. It's very visual, obviously, on Instagram. It's a lot of very, you know, photos and I do a little more of a personal side there with posting food pictures and cat pictures and things like that there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, those are probably the ones that I'm into. Now, I know a lot of people are into, like, Pinterest and other places. I'm not very familiar with those, though.
Love Pinterest.
Yeah, I never got into Pinterest either.
Yeah.
I'm a Pinterest.
Still...
Well, Holly will take you both down the Pinterest hole, believe me.
Yes,
she loves that Pinterest.
We need a Holly tour of Pinterest.
Yeah.
You need a tutorial. At Imaginarium, we'll do a Pinterest tutorial.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then I'm also on, I'm on all those that Misty just mentioned. Plus, I still belong to a couple of Yahoo chat loops. The Marketing for Romance Authors is a wonder, or actually, Romance Writers is a wonderful source of information where we can share, bounce ideas off people, off each other, and figure out what works and what doesn't work. Or even get other marketing opportunities like blog tours and stuff like that. And then, of course, I also have my blog. And then for the last 2 years, I've done the Marketing for Romance Writers Blog Challenge, where they set out 52 blog topics. And then each week, between 8 and 12 of us, we all blog on the same topic every Friday. And so that gets it out to different people. Sometimes you get other readers coming in. Sometimes it's just us chatting to each other. But still, it kind of gets you into that rhythm of if you're not familiar with, you know, having a weekly blog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
cool.
You bounce ideas off each other, too,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much difference is it in doing the blog and, like, the newsletter and doing email?
Well, a blog is where you kind of like, you can give your opinion on a specific topic. Like, I'm not sure, I haven't checked out what this week's topic was, but in the past, some of them deal with writing topics with like, to have a prologue or not, to have an epilogue or not, what's your writing habits, stuff like, you know, just stuff like that. And then other times, yeah, more fun topics, like the last one was childhood memories and holiday traditions, recipes. Whereas the newsletter is more newsy, is what you're doing and here's my latest release, or hey, I've got this particular book up for 99 cents for X amount of time. You know, that it's more self promotion or news, you know, newsy, okay, what's going on in your writing life. Mm-hmm. And the blog can be too. It's just the blog is thrown out there to anyone who can see it, whereas newsletter is more directed towards your email list, your subscriber list.
Okay.
Yes.
I got a question. It's an opinion. I'd like to hear from both of you gals, because I know you'll give it to me straight, and that's what I like. I like. What do you think is the most unethical practice that's going on in the publishing industry currently?
Oh, good Lord. Most unethical? Oh, boy.
Pick the top one. There's many.
The most unethical. I don't know if I should plead the fifth on this one or not.
Well, it could apply to self-publishing or publishers or, you know, just anything right now.
Big six,
yeah,
or anything. In the
I'm sure there's
right
plenty
now
I don't know about, because I don't know. I don't try to follow it as much as I, you know, sometimes. Last year was the big page stuffing incident of there were a lot
of.
I think
the most unethical thing is when publishers don't pay their people.
All that.
You know,
they don't
tell them that they're going under. They're not up front with them about
mm-hmm.
anything. I think that
oh.
would be the most unethical thing.
Yeah, those are bad. Yes.
Yeah. Because I have a lot of authors who were burned by Allura's Cave and some of the other small presses. That,
yeah, and there was
Tate
Publishing,
huge.
I think, that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the vanity presses. Now, admittedly,
mm-hmm.
I used a vanity press to start my career, but
mm-hmm.
then when I got more connected and, you know, did my homework or my research, then I kind of got away from it. But the vanity press is how I started out. But fortunately, I didn't invest a lot of money because I didn't have a lot of money invest in it. So
yeah.
I was one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, they can swindle right. people out of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
My first agent, you know, people were like, oh, no, you never pay an agent. Like, well, this guy's, you know, I'm not getting anywhere on my own. This guy's offered to help me. So, you know, yeah, I'll pay him $25 for 3 months, you know, to send out all these queries. And then a year later, after my first, you know, we didn't get anywhere with that. But then that's when I questioned him about, well, what about writing for magazines? And he's like, well, since you brought it up, why don't you go to this website and, you know, they will publish your book for you for a small fee. And I checked into it. It wasn't a whole lot of money. And I said, okay, this is another one to my family and said, this is what I want for my Christmas present this year. You know, give me $150 and I can get my book published. And admittedly, I got what I want. I got what I paid for. But it got me out there, and then I was like, now I have to settle this around. I had to actually get out of my shell and talk
mm-hmm.
to people. So scary.
Yes, I know how scary that is.
I was like, this is how naive I was.
Careful
here, I got
what
this
you
agent,
ask for.
He's sending queries, and I'm like, oh, yes. And, well, if I get sent on the big book tour, I may not be available. I'm picturing myself on CBS this morning and doing the round of talk shows, and I told my best friend, I said, if my publisher sends me on this tour, you know, you're going to have to go with me, because I'm not going to be in front of the cameras. I'm going to be in the green room with the two-way radio, and you're going to be, I'll just be feeding you the answers, and you'll be the face. And then, of course, none of that happened.
You've
got to learn to be a salesman. I've said, you know, people put their books out there and say, oh, they're going to sell themselves. No.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
No, it doesn't work that way in the real world.
No.
No.
It is not. No.
And that's all my introvert, you know.
Well, my husband still laughs because my first book came out when he was having heart surgery, so he loves to tell the story of, here I am, I'm in the ER dying, and my wife's selling her book to all the nurses. I'm like, well, what else am I going to do for 3 hours while we're waiting for a bed?
What? You're just tell him you're paying
for his
medical
bills.
He
didn't die.
You had to pay medical bills, he didn't die. So.
Exactly.
That's right. Just call him and help him pay the hospital bills. Say, I'm helping you. I'm helping you pay these bills.
The father's standing on the corner. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You know, take your pick, you know. Pick your battles, puppy.
I was selling mine when I was going into the operating room.
You probably were. You're like, here, I'm needing all this blood. Poor Daniel had enough blood for 6 people last year. So, you know, tell the book while you're in there. Yeah, he did.
Did you have your ketchup
was...
in your hand, too? Yes, you're going under here. Here's my ketchup.
No. They wouldn't even let me wear my top hat in the operating room.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, speaking of which, David Sheridan just sent in a picture via Facebook where he had one of Daniel's ketchup jars with a cover of Nicetel on it, and next to it, he actually saved a intact wrapped one of the tissue packs with a teacher's pet cover from Kenzie Michael. So, yeah we do have a photo of that.
The teacher's pet,
awesome.
Huh?
Yeah. So, before we get too far away from the newsletters, though, Misty and Molly, chat room question from Rebecca. Is a newsletter, do you feel it's a must for an indie writer, or can one do without and focus on other areas of marketing? So is a newsletter a must have in your
good
arsenal?
Good question. This is a question that has been debated a lot. I've heard it debated in many marketing podcasts. Yes and no. I mean, I think it depends on what you're writing and how far along you are in the process. I think as a new writer without any platform, it's not a necessity because you're going to have, like I say, you're going to have 2 subscribers. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't start one. But you should probably focus your efforts on, if you're just starting out, writing more books and keep putting more books out, because one book is not going to sell itself that much. So you need to keep writing and working your social media platform, gain followers there on Facebook, on Twitter, whatever. And then when you start a newsletter, when you've got a following on those places, you know, you advertise it there. Say, hey, I've got a newsletter. If you guys want to get notified when I have this next book coming out, you know, sign up here. And you know, that's really where you need to start, is kind of build up your platform first and then go for it. But after that, yeah, it's a great tool. It's a really great tool.
And one of my pet peeves with the newsletters is only send it out once a month, because I hate it when I sign up for a newsletter and then I get slammed like every other week. They've got something new coming out. Just save it all up and do it once a month. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to actually jump in here and say I'm going to follow up on both of you. I think it is bad to flood the inbox, yes. So I think that is excellent advice. But I do think that it is a necessary part of your toolkit as an author, for the reason that you control it. It's yours.
Yes.
When you send those newsletters out,
yeah,
they go in everybody's inbox. You don't have to worry about 2% of the people that like you seeing your post on Facebook. You don't have to worry about Twitter changing their algorithm so that half the number of people that would have seen it before now see it. When you're on third-party controlled places like social media, you're at their whim. And the newsletter is one of the things that is yours, and it goes to where it's supposed to go. So I think it's definitely something to – like Misty said, build as you're building your platform, but keep it in the mix because you control it. So that's a very good thing in the deplatforming age. So,
yeah,
definitely. I need someone to show me how to put that link on my website. You know, the subscribe to my newsletter, because several years ago I had a rather large newsletter list of people of readers. Well, then my email got hacked and I lost all my contacts. And being the stupid person I was, I had, you know, when I would do my signings, I would have them write down their emails on a piece of paper. And then as soon as I put them into my email list, I threw the paper away. So I no longer have it. And so I'm starting from scratch.
Oh, gosh.
Well, if you've only got a few subscribers and you're just building, I mean, places like MailChimp, they don't charge you until you get to a certain threshold of subscribers.
Right.
So they're very good. Yes. They keep it organized, and they will show you not only give you code so you can put it in your website so you can see, in a sidebar, you see, I subscribe to my newsletter. But one of the cool things is you can actually put code in that pops up. So when people go to your site, they'll get a quick pop-up window. Sign up for my newsletter, and you can even have it so that they can actually get a download link for like a free PDF sample or free chapter or something like that. You can actually have that sent back to them in an automated reply, but actually having something put in your website that pops up when they visit it. So that's that. So if you're trying to build that from the two or three people up to a few hundred, that's a effective tactic. And to get some size.
Yeah, I'm weird, but that just those pop-ups annoy me. They're on probably 50% of the people that do the blog challenge, and when I go to their link, it's like get that off of there. I want to be on post. I'm not there to.
But they do work. Statistically, they do work.
Yeah.
So.
That's
you can turn that off though if you really want to.
Right.
And you can set it up to have a sign up on your Facebook page too.
Right.
I've seen people do that.
Is, like, as far as like your page and stuff, most people that go are not searching to sign up for your newsletter. I mean, that's not why they're there, is to actually search out how to sign up. So that's where the pop-up windows do help, because, bam, it's in their face. They're like, oh, this will be cool. You know, I'll sign up. And if they don't want to, they can hit the X and it's gone, you know.
Yeah.
But.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I think where it comes in handy, because, they're not going to come just searching that out, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to want to look at your next book or, you know, read about you or things like that, you know.
Right.
That's their main focus.
True.
For being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Catch their interest.
It don't bother me. Yeah, you grab their interest. Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's good and bad, you know. It can be annoying, but. Yeah, it's one of those, you know, it's the lesser evils, I guess.
Yeah.
Rebecca is very happy with the responses we've had to her questions, so we did a good job of tackling that, evidently.
Yay!
She's awesome.
Yay!
Yay! Good question, Rebecca.
Let's go to ebook versus print with romance. How does it stack up? Are we talking the romance readers typically just voracious ebook readers, or is there a upsurge in print like there seems to be in, you know, a few of the other genres right now?
Ebooks, we're still seeing a lot of ebooks, and also Kindle Unlimited. As much as, you know, it's kind of a thorn in your side. Yes.
Yes.
Their romance readers are voracious, and they subscribe to Kindle Unlimited, and honestly, a lot of people make more money with paid reads than they do on sales. So that's where the romance is at the moment.
Yes, definitely.
That's a good piece of advice, actually. I wouldn't have intuitively thought of that, but that's a good piece of advice.
I don't know if my sales this year.
The giant right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The print helps, but I did have a lot of people that came by and looked at my print books and then would ask me, are you on Kindle? I said, yes, I am.
Right.
And said, oh, good. Then they would go home. They would go home and order. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we get that too. Yeah.
Do they send you their tablet for you to sign?
Huh?
No. No, sadly. No.
That'll be the next thing, you know. We'll be signing tablets. That'll be the next thing.
Just start signing people's heads or something. I don't know.
He finding the tablet and everything, and it goes on the front of the book. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, Misty, are you getting any autograph requests? Does autograph a thing anymore?
I don't even know. I started that like a long time ago, and I have not even seen it forever so long. So I don't even know if that's a thing.
Yeah, it just popped into my mind. I didn't know if
that
was still around or not.
Yeah, that was a way for authors to get like a digital signature on like an ebook, which
really
I don't even and I don't even know if it's a thing anymore, so probably not.
I haven't heard anything about it, so I don't know. I'll have to check into this now because now I'm curious.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious.
Now, let's get back to writing and pressure, because, of course, you know, George R. R. Martin, you know, everybody gives him, you know, 26 years to come up with the next installment of the Fire and Ice series, you know, Song of Fire and Ice. Okay, but romance readers, because of the fact that the readership is, you know, they consume at a faster rate when they, you know, read as readers. How many books per year do you feel you have to do to stay on the radar, you know, in terms of the prolific question? What kind of pressure are you under as a romance writer that may not apply to like an epic fantasy writer?
You definitely have to keep at it, I think, more than a fantasy writer for sure. But I don't know about a specific number, you know.
So it used to be
maintain?
It used to be if you weren't doing it every month, then you needed to do it like every 2 to 3 months. But since we've gone indie, it's really however fast we want to put them out. I mean, right now I'm averaging 2 a year.
Yeah.
And that's...
Are your readers satisfied with that?
They seem to be.
Okay. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, if you can keep them engaged. Yeah, if you can keep them engaged between times and, you know, kind of give them teasers along the way and special previews, you know, as you're writing. And I think that helps.
Yeah.
Basically, don't just go silent. Don't go ghost. Or they could very well forget about you. But,
I learned something interesting last week. When I'm in the writing zone, a lot of times, you know, I'll set my timer for 45 minutes. And then I'll post my word count online on Facebook. And then after I did this 3 or 4 days with zero interaction, I threw out the question, you know, do you guys like it when I post my hourly word count? Or would you just prefer one big chunk at the, you know, or just keep it to myself? And a lot of readers, not authors, readers chimed in like, oh, yeah, post. Okay. Apparently my... people on my friend list like to see me working. So, and then today I found out that here I am on page 18 and my main hero still doesn't have a last name. And so I threw that up. And next thing I know, I'm getting last name suggestions.
See?
Sometimes you get a new one. Sometimes it's just like crickets out there.
Right.
Yeah, that's encouraging. I mean, you know, they're looking forward to it like that and want to get the updates regularly. That's actually a positive, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, when you ask them, you know, hey, give me a name for this, or I haven't got a name for that yet.
Yeah.
They love that, because then if you pick them, oh my God, it shows up in a book and they are just thrilled, you know.
Yeah, that's
exciting. Yeah.
I do that with my titles. Sometimes we go on the great title search. And then I thank everybody, and then I make it a practice to give them a free copy of the book. Anyone who I've mentioned on my acknowledgments page, I give them a free copy. Not everybody does that,
good.
but back in 2008 or 2009, I was talking to an author friend, and I was surprised one day when I got an email from her, And I thanked her for it. And she said, well, I mentioned, you know, you helped me out, or I acknowledged you. So everybody who I acknowledge gets a free copy of the book. I'm like, well, thank you. That's really cool. So that's just something that I've kept up with.
Yeah, it is. It's
that's
an incentive
cool.
for them to keep people engaged, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I had my readers to, I had a bunch of car pictures that I put up and had them to choose the car that my heroine and a work in progress drives. So
I remember
really
that.
Good. Yeah.
That was
fun. See, I got so excited because Dan Jolly in The Storm has his protagonist at some point, you know, riding in a 1992 Chevrolet Z28, which I have. And I thought, aw, Dan, that's so sweet of you. And I thought it was because of me, you know. And no, it wasn't, unfortunately. Because of me. But pretty random, though.
You
it was pretty cool, though.
You said, yes, Stephen, it was.
Yeah.
It was. Because
yeah, like that's a very specific year and model of Camaros.
It
so
is. Wow.
I thought for sure that yeah, it had to do with me. But I'm glad that you do. So now I'll have to participate in your polls from now on, so I can finally get that. I haven't gotten to have character as far as like character names though. I've had authors use my name as a character, and then they've killed that character. Like Elizabeth Donald and Nick Rowan have both done that. Both dear friends and both I just love, but for some odd reason, yeah, they actually named characters
like
after me, and those characters were killed. So I am resilient. So yeah.
Yeah. How does that make you feel?
I will say I have a character with the last name Zimmerman, but not just Zimmer. But that was long before I met you.
We're more
that
aware
that
Zimmerman's outnumber us about 100 to 1, so you'll be a little more exclusive if you go Zimmer. So I get Zimmerman all the time when I go to like public places. People, Stephen Zimmerman. Yeah.
My junior high PE teacher's last name was Zimmerman. That's why that name popped up during a couple 10 years ago.
Did he die?
There's been legendary Zimmermans out there, like the one named Bob Dylan, yeah, who originally was, of course, Robert Zimmerman. So, yeah. So there's been some big ones there. Yep. So, yeah, the Zimmermans are they're out there.
Well,
even when you didn't know.
Hey, I got to cut in. I got to get off of here, but I want to say congrats and good luck on your new books that are going to be coming out. And don't forget at the end of the show to mention how to get a hold of you guys and where people can look you up. And
yeah, we won't
forget. I will talk to you two later.
Yep.
Bye, Holly. All right, bye, Holly. Thanks. Stay warm.
I will.
Yeah, Holly was not going to miss this show.
Stay warm
sure.
in Blizzard, Indiana.
Where are you in Indiana?
She saw Misty and Kenzie were going to be on. There's no way she's going to miss this show. But, yeah, she's under the gun there, running quite a few things since her mom had that unfortunate fall from the porch. And so, she's shouldering quite a bit up there. But she did make it on for most of the show. So, hey, you know, that's good. But now you're just stuck with Daniel and myself. So, poor you all. We will make it fun, though. And if anybody wants to call, by the way, 619-639-4616 for the last 30 minutes. If you want to call in, feel free to join the conversation at 619-639-4616. So, yeah, we'll leave the I'll be watching the lines for callers, and we'll get back to our discussion. As far as, getting back to things – Daniel, anything burning that you wanted to cover as far as romance genre? Because you mix
well,
it a little bit, but you're more erotica mix with your stuff.
I know. I joke about being, you know, romance and everything, but most people that have read mine, they're like, no.
Yeah.
The question that I have is, you know, it going back to what we were talking about earlier on the sort of precise program that you have to have on romance normally. As an independent author, how are y'all changing that program to where it best suits the reader?
worry about it. What you really need to do, you really still have to write to market. That's really the best way to ensure you're going to get some sales. I know a lot of people have mixed ideas about that. But what you can do is find out what's selling, what are the trends, and then write your story in your voice the way you want to tell it, but write something to that effect, to that trend. Don't try to copy somebody. Yeah, you know. But I think that's what indie writers are doing. You know, they're trying to write, you know, to what's popular, to what readers are wanting to see and read. But the best ones, you know, they've still got their own very unique voice and take on it.
And they have to be professionally edited and get a good cover artist, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But basically, just write it the best story you can.
But what, you know, I thought I heard one of y'all say that you're writing, like, paranormal romance. Is that a independent genre, or is that a genre that's sort of noted by the big boys too?
Oh yeah, paranormal romance has definitely been in the big publishers, as small and indies. It's everywhere. You think Twilight, anything like that is your paranormal romance. But now, for instance, I'm writing a series now. It's called the Sever the Crown series. I'm writing it actually with a co-author, Lindsay Laux. She's a paranormal romance author. And it's actually a reverse harem paranormal romance. I don't know if you've heard of reverse harems, but that's actually kind of new in the indie world. And it's new and extremely popular at the moment. But that's something you're probably not going to see in traditional publishing.
And how would you describe it?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with reverse harem.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't either at first, and then I was thinking, okay, so reverse harem usually revolves around one heroine, but she's got like four or five guys. Now, this is not like a menage. Sometimes they can be, but usually it's not. Usually it's like a series of books, and each book is like focused on one guy, mostly. But it's like a woman has this like devoted group of men that loves her, right? So it's kind of every woman's fantasy, like if you could, you know, take your husband and make clones of him, you know. But yeah, so I mean, I was kind of, it was intriguing enough for me to try it. So we're trying it, and it's turning out really well. We're really enjoying the process of it. It's fun to write all these different characters and how they interact together. And I was thankful, actually, that it wasn't one big menage because, you know, the logistics of that is just I can't even fathom, right? You know, it's not a big dog pile, thank God. So, you know, but it's been fun. But,
Let me ask another question then. So in your books, are you writing on strong women, strong men, or strong couples?
Both, yeah. I think the female usually carries the story mostly in a reverse harem series. So she's definitely my heroine is a vampire. Her name's Wren, like the bird, not like our friend Wren Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
She's a vampire, but she's a very kick-ass vampire, and she's really awesome. But she's going to have five different mates, and she gets a little stronger with everyone she acquires. So, but yeah, they all have to be strong. I mean, you can't have a little weakling. Nobody's going to like that.
No.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Well, you have,
now you're talking.
There's sometimes that you have the weak link and everything that becomes strong, but you know.
Right. Yes. Well, I mean, like, she gets stronger as you go about. Like, she starts out not knowing anything about, you know, what she is going to be and everything. But she, you know, gradually gets stronger and realizes that she needs the help of other people to help her to accomplish her goal.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Very cool. Very cool. And, I am just checking just real quick to see if we got no calls just yet. But I do want to get back to the topic of you mentioned briefly the good covers, Molly, and that is something that is a unique aspect of the romance world is the cottage industry of cover models and the fact that some of them actually become they do become celebrities, you know, where at certain conventions and all the cover models for romance novels are very sought after, you know, very popular individuals themselves. Now, I imagine that, you know, for the top tier, that's cost prohibitive for an indie author. How do you navigate that when you need a really striking cover image, cover model, but you don't have the big bucks to do like a photo shoot and pay a lot of money to a star in that arena? Covers. Talk about the covers a little bit.
Well, I was blessed. Two of my former publishers had wonderful cover artists. Now I've lost touch with the one from Freya's Bower, but my Sticker Cravings publishing cover artist, she did, I think, 11 of them for me for that publisher. And we've just stayed in touch, and she's very reasonable and very affordable and takes payment plans, which I'm very happy with. You know, takes payments. I don't have to pay her in one big chunk. But she just does wonderful work. And in fact, the last cover she did for me, I didn't even fill out the cover sheet. I just sent her the little blurbs and said, "Hey, you know, would you be willing to create something for me?" And then I told her, I said, "I've lost the questionnaire." Well, she all of a sudden 2 days later, this beautiful picture pops up in my inbox, and I'm like, I love it. And she just gets me. I don't know what it is about our
that's amazing.
We're just in sync, and that she can come up with this gorgeous picture just from the blurb that I've sent her. And there's only been one or two times that I had to say, I'm not really thrilled with this. Or how about, you know, if the model was, or the couple was posed differently. You know, there's only been, I think, like I said, once or twice that I've had to tell her, no, I'm not really thrilled about this. And then she's come up with another one that it's like, oh, this is much better.
Wow.
So that's,
yeah, hang on to
she's
her.
Just wonderful. Yeah, I'm hanging on to her with both hands.
Definitely.
In fact, she mentioned that, I don't know what happened, but one of her kids slammed her fingers in the door, so I'm hoping she's not damaged too badly.
No.
But
okay,
yeah,
Nick,
anybody who's looking for cover artists, I think her website's like Dusk to Dawn. Off the top of my head, I think it's dusktodawn.com or .org or something like that. But she's been posting some mock-ups that she's made, and it's like, oh, why don't I write steampunk? Why don't I do this? Why don't I do that? Now I want to write a book that goes with that cover.
Just the physical cover, yeah.
Well, the good news is there are a lot of designers that, you know, will work affordably that also have access to extensive libraries of licensed cover models that aren't, you know, astronomically expensive to license their images.
Yeah.
And so that's a good thing. And, you know, that's, you know, not just romance authors, but a lot of, you know, other genres take advantage of that for certain. But that's, you know, something I even found when I, you know, got into some of my novella stuff in the past year that I released on ebook only. There is a underground undercurrent of licensed images that do, you know, you can get a high quality if you can't afford the, you know, the star ones that are out there. But yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I hear about some of these conventions where, you know, it's almost like the fans are seeking out the cover models more than they are the authors, and even the authors are seeking out the cover models.
Yeah.
They're like the they're like the thing at some of these romance publishing events. Yeah. So I haven't been to one of these yet, so I couldn't tell you, but sounds
interesting. Yeah, I'm going to two this year. I'm going to two this year. One's up in Minneapolis, hopefully, if I can get there. And they will. Some authors are bringing their cover models along, and then I think at the Indie Author event, which is sponsored by Saints and Sinners Book Reviews. I went to their event last year just as a reader, and they had several cover models milling about. So that was pretty cool. I got to have my picture taken with them.
Nice.
Now I'm going to ask you a question as a muggle or a novice, because like I said, I have not, written in the genre. I have not read a lot in the genre. But at what point, because Daniel is known for having erotic elements in his books. You write in romance, and I know that doesn't mean people are just holding hands and kissing. Where is the, just for general listeners, where is the boundary line where it crosses from romance genre to erotica? What is the boundary line? And like I said, I don't want to get too uncomfortable on that kind of question, but if you could somehow address that, that actually would be something I think would be interesting for listeners.
Are we talking like physical acts?
What defines the two? Or where does one cross in the Rubicon, so to speak? Is it just too detailed, or what is the boundary line?
If the story is more sex based and focused more on the sex than the actual story plot conflict, some other external conflict, then that would be more of an erotic or erotic romance. 50 Shades of Grey, for instance, it's very sexual based. So that's where your erotic romance and erotica comes in.
And it's
there definitely
it's more
sexual.
It's more explicit too.
Yes.
It's more explicit.
A lot of your romance
So almost like a movie, romance versus XXX. Is that what you're saying? Something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. Okay.
Yeah. When I first started reading erotic romance, I was puzzled because, here you have pages and pages of sex and some dialogue, but then it's like all of a sudden, bam, they would climb out of bed and express their love for each other, and then the book would end, and I'm like, but what happens the next day? And so, and then... Yeah, I wanted to know what happened after that. And then
Along story and the relationship, erotica tilts more just physical.
More physical,
Is that a fair statement? Okay.
Yeah.
I've always been curious as to where that boundary is as far as, working as a small press publisher, we're always getting hit with how to classify things and what to label something when marketing. And so that's something I've never tackled. And so I've always been curious as to what defines them all.
Yeah. If you read either mysterious books, you're going to get a nice story arc from beginning to end. You're not just going to get the boy and girl getting together and bam, the next, here's what happens Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then boom, the book ends. No, it's, you're going to have a good story arc.
Well, I figured with YouTube, you definitely get good story and character. I wasn't worried about that.
I've written all along the spectrum. So, some of mine are definitely, I've got sweet romance where there's nothing explicit whatsoever. And then I've got very explicit stories, but it varies. And, you've got your erotic romance where you still got a romance going on in a relationship. They tend to get together and they're happy in the end and everything, but there's still a lot of sex. But then erotica is more like, it's more like your XXX. It's more like your porn.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's actually interesting. Yeah. Cause it's a big, as far as the umbrella goes, it's a very diverse and big genre with quite a lot in it. I mean,
yeah.
And every once in a while, some of that stuff you know, even, you know, kind of, you mentioned Fifty Shades of Grey kind of knocks through into the mainstream, some of the corners of that whole genre, you know, gets through and goes mainstream even. And what effect does that mm-hmm. have on the genre when something like Fifty Shades of Grey, which is definitely a, you know, a niche of the umbrella, you know, it focuses on, you know, one mm-hmm. corner of that world. What happens when that breaks through mainstream? Does it have a ripple effect on the genre
yeah.
for writers? Or
yes.
What happens?
Oh, huge, huge effect. I know actually a Kentucky-born writer who, Tiffany Wright, I don't know if you've heard of her. She mm-hmm. she wrote a erotic romance series. She could not get an agent to pick it up. She couldn't get publishers to publish it. They're like, they wouldn't touch it because it was just too explicit and everything. But as soon as 50 Shades of Grey came out, boom, she got like a 6-figure deal. She's doing awesome. She's won like Rita Awards. She's doing really good. And it's just been like that ever since. It's opened the doors for a lot of erotic romance people. And of course, you've seen the billionaire romance trend. I think it's dying mm-hmm. out a little bit now, but I mean, it's really, it really definitely opened some doors.
Definitely. And also, when I started, I got my first erotic romance book published in 2009, and what, 50 Shades came out, what, 12? Something
yeah,
like that.
Probably about right.
Before that, you know, I'd set up my little booths and really wasn't getting much notice because I didn't have any print books. It was all on CD. And when 50 Shades of Grey came out, I bought the book. I admitted did not like it. It was, but that's neither here nor there. I put the book on my table, and oh my gosh, the women flocking to my table. Oh my gosh, did you write that? I love that book. And I'm sitting there, oh good. If you like that, you like this. And I had a free, you know, I had a sample, and they're like, oh my gosh, where can I get this? So go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, mm-hmm. Smashwords, you know, it's everywhere. Like, oh, great, they take my card, and they take, you know, any flyers that I had from my online friends at Bookstore, usually cover flats or
Hello?
Swag, and they would Uh-oh. Walk away holding it stuff. It's like,
oh,
I need to start having a bag so they can stuff all this stuff in. But I did one craft fair, and the woman must have carried away about 1/2 inch of stuff.
Oh wow!
And
yeah,
everybody was just thrilled. And then I get online and post my stuff, and I get other my author friends going, "Why do you have that horrible book on your table?" I'm like, "Cause it's bringing customers to it."
All right. Well, yeah,
it's a marketing tool.
You're going to have that. Yep.
And now that I have print books, I don't have to put that on my table, but it's still tucked away in my toolbox that in case it comes up, then I can show it to them.
There you go.
Get a little bit into live events, because you both do live events and you both do them very well. How do you is there any special way that you market? Well, I know Kenzie, you've got your awesome swag, talked about that. Is there any special way or is it any different to market romance releases than it is, say, you know, like your fantasy work, Misty?
Yes. It really depends on, I get such a diverse crowd usually at most events that I'm at, because they're usually multi-genre events, and I've got a lot of different romance, so I'm like, I usually ask people what they like to read, and okay, I like fantasy, or I like, you know, so I'll say, okay, well, I've got this fantasy romance series here, you'll like it, you know, and you focus on whatever aspect it is that they like, you know, so if they person say like history, well, I've got this historical romance here, and it's all set in, you know, Tennessee in 1866, blah blah blah, you know, so you really kind of just discover what the readers like, ask them about it first.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I did something last year I never thought a romance author would, you know, would possible to do, is I started doing Comic-Cons, because I figured Comic-Cons, they just wanted you know, comic books and maybe fantasy were authors. And then Tony took me to In Conjunction last year and had a blast. I met more romance readers than I ever thought would be there and did fairly
wow.
well. And then, in fact, I set up at a local Indiana State University has a small Comic-Con, kind of like a Purdue. I found out Purdue does one too, but I was too late to get in on it last year. And so I got in on the ISU one. And a three-day event, you know, you meet a lot of people and actually manage to sell some. Not just my sci-fi stuff, but some of my, you know, the regular romance too. And this year, looking into, there's one coming up in Robinson, Illinois. It's the first time for this convention, so not sure how well we're going to do, but, you know, it's fairly cheap. The booth spaces are only $20, so, you know, hey, why not go check it out? It's, you know, it's not going to be out a huge a lot of money, and it's only an hour from my house. And then Brian Morris that I met with, I actually met him last year at BoilerCon, and a funny sidebar, when I walked up to him, we were talking, he was like, yeah, I'm going to something called Imaginarium. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can tell you.
Oh,
about
yeah.
That.
Yeah, he was
and
beside me,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's been a great wealth of which conventions he's done well at, and he's seen other, you know, other authors and other genres there, too. And he's like, oh, yeah, I think you do great here and here. And I'm like, okay. So looking into a couple of comic conventions this year. So,
no, you hit upon
hey,
an excellent point because actually one of my best sales days of all of last year was I did one event where I was one of the only people with fantasy in the entire room, and it was mainly romance, suspense, mystery, thriller type authors, and I was one of the only ones that
wow.
was doing you know like horror fantasy
wow.
stuff, and it ended up being
wow.
one of my best sales days by far because it's not just the people that come to a event that are readers, but the people that come with them to the event. So like the significant
yeah.
others and the and things like that. Because I had it happen again and again where there was one person that was there to get the books that were primarily in the room, but then their husband
mm-hmm.
or their wife was into what I did. And so all of a sudden
exactly.
they're like, whoa, hey, there's something for me here. And I ended up doing very well on a day where all the others got diluted a little bit because of the number
mm-hmm.
of people in the room. And
yeah.
So there is something to be said for being the oddball in the mix. Sometimes it
yeah.
works
yeah.
your advantage.
Yeah,
strategy.
I actually did have a couple of mothers at the ISU event. And the mothers actually were looking over my stuff while their children were off playing the games
yep.
in the other room. So that was a big plus.
Very true. Yeah, and it can work in your favor. That's a good
mm-hmm.
bit of advice for listeners that are looking for ways to maximize their live appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And
I've got about
being
7 minutes here. So,
bookworm I am.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I said, being the big bookworm I am, you know, if I had gone to a craft fair and found someone selling their books, I'd have stayed there and forgotten the rest of it. And I have run into a couple
mm-hmm.
of younger readers who are right on the cusp because my Molly Daniel series, I tell people that's good, that, you know, mature 12, but definitely 15, whereas the Kenzie Michaels is supposed to be 18 and older. And so I tell people, you know, tell these young girls that, well, how old are you? And then they find out they're 12. Okay, you need to stay on this side of the table. Or if they're 16, and if they've read Fifty Shades of Grey, they're like, well, okay, you can look at Kenzie, you know, but I'm going to run it by mom and dad first. And
right.
So, but I've
well, coming up,
done,
about
I've done well at both
left.
Places, so.
So is there any – I'm trying to cover a very broad range of stuff tonight, obviously, with a chance to talk to both of you about this genre. And but is there anything that I have not touched upon that you think is important to get across to the audience? Or have we done a pretty good job so far?
I think you guys have done pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to hear all their connections is what I want to hear.
Connections, yes. The
connections.
Where to find you. Yes, where to find you online.
Goodness. Oh.
Well,
you know,
Missy first, then Molly.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely on Facebook a lot. So just, you know, look up Misty Parker. My Facebook author page is called Romance for Every Reader, and I'll be there. I've also got mistyparker.com. That's my website, and you can sign up for my newsletter there and see all my updates. I've got a lot of things coming out this year, so I'm definitely very excited to be working on those, and I need to get my rear in gear and be working faster on those, but yeah, just come and find me.
Well, I have faith in you. You're a go-getter, Misty, so I'm not worried about it. You'll get it.
I hope so.
All right. Molly, you're up now. Where do we find you?
On Facebook, I'm there primarily as Molly Daniels, but there is a Kenzie Michaels page, author Kenzie Michaels and author Molly Daniels pages as well. On Twitter, I'm on Twitter as Kenzie Michaels, Instagram Kenzie Michaels. I have three blogs. MJDaniels.blogspot.com is the Molly blog. Actually, let's scrap that. Just go to MollyDaniels.wordpress.com. That's my website, and on the front page, when you type that in, it's got all the information with my links on it. I don't have a newsletter yet, but one will be coming, and I am diligently working on my time travel series because I do want to submit it somewhere. I don't know if I'm going to indie publish it or if I'm going to send it to Hydra or you guys to check out, see if you'd be interested, or if I'm just going to publish it myself, because it ended up being more of a trilogy, and my Uncle Charles is popping up in just about everything I write anymore. And then, but coming up, I know it's weird, he just pops into my brain. And then I'm getting ready to release my 25th book, Catered Romance, which is, will be coming.
Nice.
I want to release it in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm going to release it in May, but I'm hoping to get the ebook up for pre-order by March. Because my class reunion is coming up this summer, and I want to have it up in time for everybody to get that. Plus, this is the 10th year anniversary of Kenzie, so she's been published 10 years as of 2019.
Yeah,
because you and I are about even now. This is my 10th year too. I think we're both celebrating 10th year anniversaries this year.
Yay!
So it's kind of cool. Hey, it's a milestone,
pop
right?
Out the bubbly.
So good.
Yeah.
We'll
it's
pop out the bubbly
so
next
I'm
October.
A little behind, but, yeah.
Bubbly first and bourbon second, for sure.
Yeah.
Or bourbon first and bubbly. I don't know.
We'll yeah.
Figure it out.
Since I've never tasted bourbon, yeah, that'd be good.
Oh,
really?
That's too fun. But yeah, congratulations, because yeah, that is a good milestone. That represents a lot of work. I can definitely vouch for that.
Yeah,
so.
I'm still pinching myself, so I'm still pinching myself.
All right, so we got about a minute and a half. So, is there anything, Daniel, that you want to mention, or how are we doing?
I think that the ladies have given us a big ride tonight through the area of romance and. Helped us to understand a little bit more about where we need to change our tactics at. So,
mm-hmm.
There you go.
Right. No, I've actually, this yeah. has been fascinating yeah. for me. I love to get to peek into a genre that I'm not active in every day and find out, you know, what
mm-hmm.
that world is like. So thank you for, actually answering some questions I had even, and that I was curious about. So,
yeah.
I wish Holly got to stick around for the last half hour, but this has been a great show, and I think for listeners that aren't familiar with the behind the scenes of the genre, I think it's been very informative. So thank you for that.
And if you want to damage your eardrums, I'm on YouTube. I post my weekly karaoke songs that I think I some I do well at, some I do, I'm not so sure about. But
I did not know that.
Yeah, not a lot of people. I'm always surprised when I get someone commenting on one of my videos. I'm like, oh my God, you watched that?
Wow. Awesome. You brave woman.
So if you want to damage your, if you want to damage your eardrums.
Oh,
no,
I have three kids already so damaged.
I encourage people to check those out because I actually have, and they're quite good. So yeah, check those out.
Well, Stephen, let me ask you a question real quick. Where are you going to be at next?
Oh yes, yeah. Tell us where you're going to be at. Yeah, next.
I think he was asking you.
Yeah, he was asking you.
I'm asking all of you. So.
Oh, all of us. Oh, okay. You know, I actually don't have anything planned yet for the year. Probably Imagineering.
The only place
that. But. I don't know for sure.
Well, I'm going to be at the Kentuckiana Book Fair in April 13th. Are you going to be there?
Oh, right. Yeah, that one. Okay, yes. There we go. Forgot about that one.
I just confirmed that yesterday. I will be joining you there. So, yeah, count me in that,
yeah.
Too.
I need to be, yeah. Yeah, it's right down the road from me, so I really have no excuse.
Yeah. And before that, it's March. I'm not sure of the date. March something. I'll be at Robinson, Illinois, for their Vision Comics. I think it's what it is.
Very cool. And did we cover Misty's dates yet? Upcoming.
Okay. Yeah. April. Yes. Well. I'll be at the April. The book fair, the Kentuckiana, what is it called? It's
the Authors Fair, yeah.
Authors
the
Fair,
Kentuckiana,
yeah.
Authors,
yeah,
Fair.
The
ninth annual,
yeah,
ninth authors, annual this year.
Ninth annual Authors Fair,
ninth,
yeah.
Annual.
In LaGrange,
yay.
Kentucky. Yes, LaGrange, Kentucky at the community
LaGrange.
Center. Yes, I'll be there in April. And then probably Imaginarium in October. And I may go to the RWA convention this year, but we'll still waiting to see on that one.
You'll be
very
where?
Cool, very cool.
Or which one are you waiting on?
RWA convention, the national convention.
Oh,
in July. Yeah, Romance Writers of America.
Yeah. Tony, if
fantastic.
You're listening, I'd love to go back to Higgins Conjunction again in July.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to get back. I went to In Conjunction years ago, but it always falls on my birthday weekend, which is July 2nd, and they always fall on the first weekend in July.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I stopped going because that's kind of like a weekend that I actually have. It's one weekend I actually have fun. It's like my one personal weekend of the year. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I used to go.
I love In Conjunction, though. It's a good show. It is a very good
show. I
had and, fun. Yeah. A lot of good guests at that one and good folks that run it too. So yeah, good show.
Can I
sure.
mention one more thing? Can I mention one
yes,
more thing?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
You
for
can mention
any
two
of you
or
local
five
writers,
or ten.
Any local romance writers, if you or even if you're interested in romance writing, we have a local Romance Writers of America chapter. It's called the Louisville Romance Writers. Our first meeting of the year is this Saturday. It's at the Southwest Regional Library in off of Dixie Highway in Louisville. It starts at 11 o'clock, and we're going to have a big presentation called The Root of Character by Damon Swade. He's an author and very good marketer. So we're going to have that. It's going to be a nice meeting, and we're planning on lots of good content this year. So your first couple meetings are free, and if you want to pop in and see what we're all about, we'd love to have you there.
Very cool.
Cool.
And that should be, yeah, I think we've about got it here. I think we've got a fairly complete show at this point. Victory has been achieved.
Yay!
thank you so much for joining us. I've really had a lot of fun and always want to, you know, have you two on whenever you can, you know, be on the show, and we'll definitely have to have you pop in one more time before Imaginarium for sure. because that's that'd be fun to get some updates as you have your big year ahead of you, and hopefully 2019 is going to be your biggest yet for both. So
I hope
that's,
not. I hope so.
We'll meet. So thank you very much. Daniel,
I set quite
final
a high
words?
Bar for myself last year. So.
Do what, Steve?
We got it.
Oh, final words? Thomas?
We've got a blog tour coming up that we're
still
looking for a few extra people for, I believe. And, you know, I will be at Freaks and Geeks at Burlesque Show in Nashville on February 22nd, 23rd, and then I'll be at the Music Murfreesboro Anime and Comic Con March 2nd, 3rd, and plan on being at Chattanooga, which is down in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the 24th, I believe it will be, that I'll be down there of February.
That's a good show. Very good show. Very good show.
And
love Chattanooga. And
I've got about three other ones that I'll be at before, you know, April, so
nice.
We have to order some books real
soon. Well, you all have given nice calendars. I will say I'm going to be in Vivi on Friday, February the 1st for the Community Art Center right there on Main Street. I'm doing their first Friday. It's fairy tale themed, and I'll be doing my first show representing both the Raiden Valkyrie Tales Compendium and the Ragnar Stormbringer Compendiums. But I will say that those books and Dream of a Navigator, my three books from 2018 in print, all have versions of the Fae. They're very different in the two realms, but I do it, so it fits the theme. So yeah, I will be there, and there is a connection there. And but that's from 4 to 9 p.m. in VV, Indiana, if you'd like to see yours truly. And other than that, I think we've got it all covered. So thank you very much, Misty and Molly and Daniel, for a great co-hosting night again. And next week, we'll see everybody at 9 p.m. Eastern time on the Star Chamber show. And so I'll let you all say goodnight, and we'll wrap it up.
Thank you, ladies, and good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good night, everybody.
Good night.